Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're jumping into a topic that's really buzzing, especially in longevity circles and, you know, the whole biohacking scene. Peptides. Now that word peptide, it might be totally new for some of you, but stick with us, because what these things are and what they do, it's pretty fascinating.
It really is. Fundamentally, peptides are like miniature proteins. Think of them as the body's communication network. They're signaling molecules built from amino acids, and they basically regulate almost everything.
Everything? Like what specifically?
Well, hormones, brain function, the immune system, sexual function, even how your tissues repair themselves. It's vast. Your body makes, get this, over 300,000 different types, and outside the body, and maybe 6 million more, found in some surprising places, like venoms or even dairy.
Wow. Okay, so if they're that fundamental, that powerful, why don't we hear more about them day to day? That's kind of our mission here. We want to really unpack what peptides are, how they actually work inside your body, and crucially, how they're being used. You know, for treating diseases, optimizing health, maybe even rolling back the clock biologically. And here's something that really clicked for me, things you have heard of, like insulin, or that big weight loss drug, Ozempic, which is semaglutide.
Those are peptides.
Exactly. They're peptides. So this isn't some fringe thing. It shows how core this biology is.
Precisely. When I explain it, I often say there's single molecules, small proteins, just chains of amino acids. The FDA has this, well, sort of arbitrary dividing line. Under 40 amino acids, it's a peptide. Over 40, a biologic. Over 100, traditionally a protein, but functionally.
I like the analogy of a doorbell. A peptide arrives at a cell, rings the doorbell, and triggers a specific reaction inside. It's a signal.
Okay, the doorbell analogy helps. Yeah, or like a key in a lock.
Yeah.
Very specific. And how they work, well, it varies. Some tiny ones, like epithelon, can actually go right into the cell nucleus, interact directly with DNA, but most bind to receptors on the cell surface. Surprise.
Right.
When the peptide docks there, it sets off a chain reaction, a cascade. It's similar to how insulin binds to let glucose into the cell.
So that specificity, that doorbell ringing,
yeah.
How does that make them different from, say, a typical prescription drug? Are they safer because they're more natural or bioidentical?
That's a great question and a really key difference. Traditional drugs are often new-to-nature molecules.
Yeah.
They're designed to block or interfere with a pathway, which works, but often comes with side effects downstream because you're kind of jamming the system. Peptides, though, they're biomolecules. The body knows them. It evolved with them. Their job is to regulate, to support natural processes. Now, that doesn't mean zero side effects. If you use them at really high pharmacological doses, think semaglutide again, you can definitely see issues.
Right. Context matters.
Absolutely. And even though the body makes hundreds of thousands, we only really understand a fraction. Maybe 150 are being seriously researched now, and over 80 are already FDA-approved drugs.
80 approved already. That's significant.
Mm-hmm.
So where are they making the biggest impact right now? Let's talk applications. Tissue repair seems like a big one.
Oh, definitely. Tissue repair, injuries. I mean, my neighbors practically line up sometimes. Hey, doc, got this shoulder or elbow or ankle. The go-to peptide there, the one people ask about most, is BPC-157.
BPC-157. Heard that name a lot.
Yeah, it's derived from stomach fluid, believe it or not. Discovered back in the 90s in Croatia. It's just remarkable for healing.
I actually tried it myself once for some nagging bicep tendonitis. The recovery felt faster than usual. Why is it so good for those kinds of injuries, tendons and such?
It really shines there. Tendons, muscle tears, injecting into joints. There was this classic study, kind of gruesome but telling. They cut the Achilles tendons on rats. One group got BPC-157 just injected systemically, like in the stomach.
Not even at the injury site?
Nope. And a month later, they were walking. You just don't see that normally. My own son actually had a bad ITB injury from cross country in high school, could barely walk. I showed him that rat study.
Huh, persuasive.
He finally agreed to let me inject it locally. A week later, he was running again.
Wow. So how does it do that?
It's multifaceted. It dials down inflammation big time. It calls in the immune system cavalry to clean up and rebuild. And critically, it activates the growth hormone receptor. There's this pathway, the FATLC receptor pathway. Basically, it makes the cells more receptive to growth hormones' healing signals.
So it turbocharges the natural repair process.
Pretty much. And it's not just local. It has systemic benefits, too. I call it the Wolverine peptide sometimes because it seems to help the whole body heal and function better.
Mm-hmm.
Like people with acid reflux often find it helps tighten up that valve at the bottom of the esophagus. They might get off their meds.
Interesting. Okay, Moving from repair to defense, the immune system. You mentioned that earlier.
Right. Thymosin alpha 1, or TA1. This one's natural, produced by your thymus gland.
The thymus, that's in the chest, right?
Right.
Kind of shrinks as we age.
Exactly, behind the sternum. Sometimes called sweetbreads in cooking, though maybe let's not dwell on that. But yeah, as it shrinks with age, our immune function declines.
Which is a huge deal. That's immunosenescence, right? Makes us more vulnerable to everything. Infections, right. Cancer. You see it with flu season, hitting older people harder.
Precisely. So TA1 can help bolster that aging immune system. For general health, maybe 250 micrograms once or twice a week. If you feel something coming on, you might use a higher dose, like a milligram. My wife felt like she was getting sick once, did 1 milligram, and boom, fine the next day.
And is it safe? Long-term use?
It has an incredible safety profile. There was a massive review, looked at 11,000 human clinical trials globally. Very safe, very effective. It was even approved as an orphan drug back in the 70s for babies born without a thymus. Literally saved lives.
That's powerful. Okay, what about the really big picture? Longevity, cellular rejuvenation, anti-aging, basically.
For that, Apithalon is really exciting. It's a tiny, just 4 amino acids, also naturally sourced, this time from the pineal gland.
Pineal gland, melatonin connection.
Yes. And just like the thymus, the pineal tends to calcify and shrink as we age. So we lose melatonin, but also Apithalon. And when Apithalon levels drop, cells can kind of get stuck. They stop replicating properly. It's called senescence.
Cellular retirement home.
Sort of. Apithalon seems to nudge them back into the cell cycle, encourages the creation of new, fresh cells, skin, heart, liver, pancreas. I've seen patients with prediabetes or type 2 diabetes manage to cut back on their meds, even stop them. And some really interesting results with vision, like improving macular degeneration.
That's significant.
Mm-hmm.
What about the melatonin link? Does it help sleep?
Profoundly. This is one of its biggest effects for many people. It actually activates 3 genes in the pineal gland that are responsible for making melatonin naturally. I used to take melatonin myself, higher and higher doses. Since I started cycling Apithalon, I don't need it at all.
Cycling. So you don't take it continuously.
Right. That's important. You need to cycle it to keep getting that magic. Maybe 5 milligrams injected under the skin daily for 10 days, twice a year, or something like that. If you take it all the time, the effect seems to fade. It also comes as an under-the-tongue spray, which is easier for some folks.
Okay. And I heard something really surprising about it. Female hormones.
Yes. It's quite intriguing. There are reports, anecdotal but consistent, of it seeming to improve ovarian function. Some postmenopausal women have even reported their periods returning.
Wow. That really speaks to a fundamental biological reset.
It really does. It feels like it's working at a very deep level.
Okay, quickly, what about skin? Always a popular topic.
GHK copper. It's actually a natural byproduct when collagen breaks down. You apply it topically, and it signals your fibroblasts. Those are the skin cells that make collagen to ramp up production. More collagen, more hyaluronic acid. Better looking skin.
So you use it yourself?
Oh, yeah. Face, abdomen. Oh. I live in Florida, not always perfect with sunscreen, but I feel like my skin holds up pretty well, and I credit GHK copper partly for that.
Good to know. And libido, sexual function, any peptides there?
PT-141 is probably the best known for increasing desire, works for both men and women, and then there's oxytocin.
A love molecule.
That's the one. Also an FDA-approved peptide, actually, with benefits beyond just bonding and connection.
And you mentioned cancer earlier, not as a cure, but support.
Yes, crucial distinction. As an adjuvant, helping the immune system do its job better against the cancer, peptides like TA1, which we talked about, but also things like metenkephalin, GHK copper, Apithalon. There are studies suggesting they can improve longevity, improve mortality rates when used alongside conventional treatments. I mentioned my father earlier, diagnosed with aggressive cancer, given maybe 30 days.
Right.
With peptides, better nutrition. We got 8 more months. And not just existing, but living. He went from needing a walker to walking 2 miles a day, gained weight back. It was hard. It was amazing quality time.
That's incredible. A really powerful story. Okay, let's shift gears slightly. Growth hormone is always a hot topic in anti-aging. What's the peptide connection there?
Right. The growth hormone releasing peptides, or GHRPs, this is where you hear names like tesamorelin, sirmorelin, CJC-1295, epomorelin. They work by stimulating your pituitary gland to release more of its own growth hormone.
Okay, sounds good in theory.
It can be, but this class actually has the most common side effects we see with peptides. Maybe 20% of patients react. You can get welts at the injection site, sometimes even systemic rashes. The body can develop antibodies. If you see those welts getting bigger, that's usually a sign to stop.
So caution is needed. And what about the whole fountain of youth debate around growth hormone itself?
Yeah, that's been argued for decades. Does it make you younger or age you faster? My take, clinically. Judicious use is key. We're talking little use. Physiological doses, not the massive amounts bodybuilders might use. Small pulsed amounts seem beneficial for repair and body composition for many.
And any specific ones stand out? You mentioned CJC 1295.
CJC is interesting. It can give you incredibly deep sleep. First time I took it, I got this weird burning sensation, almost like a hot flash, especially if I'd had any alcohol.
Odd.
Yeah, but then slept like a log.
Yeah.
You usually cycle it maybe 5 days on, 2 days off, so you don't potentially, you know, burn out the pituitary's responsiveness.
Makes sense. This brings us to another big factor in aging and energy mitochondria. So many people feel their energy just flags as they get older.
Absolutely. Mitochondrial function is central. They're the power plants of your cells. When they decline, everything slows down.
Can you measure that?
You can. We check NAD levels, specifically intracellular NAD in white blood cells. There's a finger stick test now from Ginfiti Lab, makes it pretty easy. My wife's levels were low, for example. We used NMN, first nicotinamide mononucleotide. It's a B vitamin, basically, an NAD precursor.
Not a peptide itself, but related.
Right, related to energy production. Her levels shot up in a month, energy improved dramatically. So optimizing NAD is foundational. But there are mitochondrial peptides, too. MOTSC is a great one.
MOTSC, what does it do?
It basically tells your mitochondria to get to work, run faster, more efficiently. When I tried it, first dose felt good, second better, third dose. I really felt an energy surge. It can also help with metabolism, weight management, seems to help convert white fat, the storage kind, into brown fat, which is more metabolically active.
How do you use that one?
Usually intermittently. Maybe 10 milligrams once a week or 5 milligrams twice a week. But, important safety note, very rarely severe reactions can happen. I had one patient, just one, who had an anaphylactic reaction to MOTSC. So it's rare, but possible.
Good to be aware of. Any others for mitochondria?
SS31 is another interesting one. The analogy I use is like the elastic in old underwear. You know how it gets stretched out, loses its snap? Mitochondria can lose structural integrity with age. SS31 seems to help kind of snap that elastic back, improve the structure so they produce energy, ATP, more efficiently.
Okay, these all sound incredibly promising.
Yeah.
But let's address the elephant in the room. Safety and sourcing. It can feel like the Wild West out there sometimes. How do people navigate this?
That's such a critical point. And you're right to ask. Overall, peptides have a very good safety profile, especially the ones mirroring natural body processes. The main flags are those GHRPs, the potential for antibody reactions we discussed, and those super rare anaphylactic events like with MOTSC.
What about the really strong ones, like semaglutide for weight loss? That's getting a lot of press, including side effect concerns.
Right, and that's different. That's using a peptide at high pharmacological doses, often long term.
Yeah.
We are seeing significant issues there. Bowel wall thickening, obstructions, pancreatitis risk. Those really need careful consideration, should be used sparingly and always with lifestyle changes. You can't just rely on the shot. There are even natural herbs that can help boost GLP-1, the pathway semaglutide targets.
So regulation. Is that part of the issue? The FDA seems wary.
There's definitely pushback. Proposed bans on certain peptides. It's frustrating because the argument from our side is many of these work, they're safe when used correctly, and they're often bioidentical. This is why I urge everyone listening, please go to savepeptides.org. Sign the petition. If you can, donate. They're trying to fund proper human trials, like for BPC-157, to get the data the FDA wants. We need the support.
Okay, savepeptides.org. And finding a doctor who knows this stuff, that seems crucial.
Absolutely essential. You need someone who understands the nuances, the science, the appropriate dosing and cycling. Not just anyone writing a script. The Clinical Peptide Society, that's clinicalpeptidesociety.com, is a great resource. They list practitioners who've gone through specific training and testing.
Good. And sourcing. Where do these peptides actually come from safely?
This is non-negotiable.
Yeah.
You must use a 503A compounding pharmacy. There are only about 20 in the U.S. that make sterile injectables properly.
503A. Why them specifically?
Because they are FDA regulated for compounding sterile products. They're state inspected. They have third-party testing for mold, bacteria, purity. You can have confidence in what you're getting. Avoid research chemical sites online.
Okay. Crucial advice. So when someone comes to you, How do you decide if peptides are right and which ones? What's your approach?
It's comprehensive. We don't just jump to peptides. We start with deep testing DNA damage, genetic SNPs, looking for things like leaky gut, checking liver function, toxin load, oxidative stress. We even measure biological age.
Building a foundation first.
Exactly. I talk about the foundation triangle of health. Hormones, gut health, liver detox, plus sleep, exercise, nutrition. We optimize those first. Peptides usually come in as phase two or three after we've addressed the basics. Unless, of course, it's an acute injury like that torn shoulder or an immediate immune need.
Can you share another example of how this plays out?
Sure. I mentioned that 80-year-old Alzheimer's patient earlier couldn't really hold a conversation initially.
Right, the one whose biological age reversed.
Yes. After a year on a specific protocol, it's not published yet, but involved peptides tailored to him alongside foundational work, his cognitive score shot up. He was trading stocks again. Biological age dropped 8 years. It was remarkable. Or another one, a woman facing shoulder replacement, 5 different tiers, rotator cuff, labrum, couldn't lift her arm, chasing her grandkid did it.
Ouch. Surgery seemed inevitable.
That's what she was told. We did monthly injections, BPC-157, and another one, thymosin beta-4, right into the shoulder joint. 5 months later, full range of motion, no surgery needed. My own mom, too. Partial meniscus, tear in her knee, a few targeted injections, and she recovered incredibly fast.
It really drives home the potential when used correctly.
Yeah.
So wrapping this up, this deep dive really highlights that peptides aren't just some futuristic concept. They're here. They're part of our natural biology, and they hold immense potential for health, recovery, maybe even longevity. But the key takeaway, it seems, is responsibility. Finding knowledgeable practitioners, using safe sources, it's not DIY territory.
Absolutely. Please check out savepeptides.org, lend your support. And for finding qualified practitioners or just learning more, clinicalpeptidesociety.com is the place to go. Education is key.
It leaves you wondering, doesn't it? As we get better at understanding and maybe even guiding these intricate communication systems within our own bodies, what's next? What new levels of health, vitality, and maybe even resilience could we unlock? Not just fixing what's broken, but truly optimizing our biological potential. Lots to think about.